The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board.
Woo!
All right, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Cold Omaha and Zone Coverage can be found on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren, and you can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. Producing today behind the screen, turning the knobs, punching the keys, is Tom Schreier at TSchreier3 on Twitter.
Woo-hoo.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Had a really fun staff podcast today. Make sure you check that out. It's called the Cold Omaha Staff Pod. You can find it on zonecoverage.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Libsyn, Google Play, Carrier Pigeon, anything else you can think of, you will be able to find it. We have a very special show today. As you know, we've been doing simulcasts on Periscope, where I take the video, put it up on YouTube. We try to do those almost every day. Really good reception to those. But on our weekly show on Tuesdays, we like to go longer form and have big guests with us. In studio today from CSN Chicago is Dan Hayes. Dan, how are we doing?
I'm good. Wait, hey, we're not on camera, right? I didn't put makeup on today.
Yeah. We forgot to have the makeup guy get you. No, we're good here. I do the Periscopes just because then here's the best kept secret about Periscope. You don't have to prepare at all.
Not at all.
All your material is spoon fed to you. Like someone's feeding you Gerber baby food, which we're not on yet with my baby, I might add. I do have the cutest baby in the world, and I got to put in a plug for that. She turned 5 weeks old today. Beautiful little girl.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. I'll take the cheap heat. It's like when a wrestler comes in and says, oh, I'm happy to be in Chicago, and then everyone starts, I will use my baby for those kind of means because I am that kind of dad. However, you are in town because the Chicago White Sox are in town. Derek Holland taking the mound tonight against Irvin Santana. And so you are coming in on the heels. I don't want to say you're on the heels of, but you're coming in with a ball club that's 31-37 in last place. But what does that even mean in the American League Central this year? What have you seen so far from this team? I mean, I think a lot of people expect it to be a transitioning year with the Chris Sale trade, with the Adam Eaton trade. Granted, Adam Eaton's now out for the year. But have they basically met your expectations so far this season?
Honestly, it's hard to say, it's strange to say. I think they've exceeded expectations so far, and it is a rebuilding year. I mean, you trade two guys that are worth 12 wins off of last year's team, and you're pretty much going in the tank. You know you are. I mean, you don't try to get better by trading away your best players, but they got tired of no depth, and that's what it's been all these years. Is last year, Austin Jackson goes down in June, and all of a sudden, J.B. Shuck gets 300 plate appearances.
He's at AAA with the Twins right now.
Right now. I saw him actually when I was in Charlotte about a month and a half ago, and I love J.B. Shuck. He's a very good fourth outfielder.
I loved when the announcer in Chicago, J.B. Shuck. Like it's like your T.C. when you guys are here in town
exactly.
To see the home run derby.
Exactly. And good player, but he's a fourth outfielder. He should not be an everyday starting guy. He just doesn't hit enough. And you know, that's just one example. They had tons of examples like that where they just – didn't have depth and it killed them, and so they make these trades and it's expected they're just going to be awful. And they still have a pretty good roster, but what's been really good is some of the younger guys playing up in the time that's been created. I mean, Avisail Garcia has been amazing. He's fifth in the All-Star voting. Really, he should be in the All-Star game, no question about it. Leury Garcia just went on the disabled list, but you look at him, his first 308 plate appearances in the majors, he struck out 33% of the time. This year, he's cut that rate to 17%.
That's
he's
huge.
Got an 805 OPS right now. Yomer Sanchez has been making the most of
the
his
former Carlos time. Sanchez, for people
former
who might
Carlos
know.
Sanchez, exactly. Better player than Carlos Sanchez. And, you know, you look around and you see guys like that, and it's been very good. Tommy Canley's another guy. I mean, you look at the strikeout to walk right now.
Absurd.
Obviously, yeah, no, Wolf. That's one I'm looking forward to diving into this weekend or this week here, finding out. But, I mean, I think he's 48-6 strikeouts to walk so far this season.
It's absurd.
He's just taken this chance of opportunity with all these injuries and run with it. And we've seen a lot of that. And so even though, you know, there's 600-500, the White Sox, after these three games, are going to have played 44 of their first 71 on the road, and
jeez,
yet they're still within, you know, striking distance.
Six games
of
right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, it says a lot to me about at least that they are doing more than I thought they would.
So not everyone gets to cover a team right away. In fact, you didn't even cover this team right away. You covered the Padres before. But what was your beginning as far as baseball, even maybe even just enjoying baseball as a kid, and then how was your path to where you're at here forged?
I mean, I was a terrible player.
We've all been there.
Yeah, my family was, my cousins both played college ball, and they were pretty good. And I think their ability to be good players, you know, one was D1 AA, and the other was just junior college. But, I mean, just them being good, and we always loved baseball. And, I mean, I basically got into journalism, and the Padres beat opened up at my newspaper. I was a general assignment guy. Like, I was doing mixed martial arts and UFC.
You don't look like an MMA kind of guy.
I did six fights, and it was fun. It was great.
And you lived to tell about it.
I did. I probably wouldn't go back to covering it again. No. I did NASCAR. I did Little League World Series, everything. And
wow.
Padre Beat opened up, and they said 3 days before spring training, can you go to spring training? I'm like, what, for the weekend? They said, oh, no, the whole time.
And it was 6 weeks or something like that?
6 weeks, exactly.
Wow.
And it's just taken off since then. This is my 11th season now.
And so when did you go from San Diego to Chicago?
2012, and I started covering that team. It's the last team for the White Sox to finish above 500, and I picked them up the weekend that they acquired Kevin Youkilis from the Red Sox, and they made a great run.
I covered that series.
Yeah, he was here. That's right. This was his first. In fact, this was
he came in with a Red Sox bag.
I think I did three games at home against the Brewers. I saw a Greinke Sale showdown on a Friday night.
That's
which
dirty.
Was awesome. It was like 1-0 or 2-1. And then we came here for three here, and then New York for four. That was my first road trip. So I got my first taste of Pizza Luce back then.
That's where I got you today.
I just went to lunch there today. So yeah.
What'd you get?
Just pepperoni.
We ate there on our wedding night. So
it's, that place is amazing.
We stayed at the Grave 601. I think it's called the Lowe's now. I think we were on the 17th floor. In fact, the Twins, I think, played Cleveland that night. And we could see into the stadium at Target Field and the roof of Target Center, which oddly enough has grass on it. Who knew?
Yeah, yeah.
So when MLB The Show started doing PS4 games and they would do the pregame shot and it would be a cartoonized version of what's real,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, they got grass on Target Center. That's pretty awesome. But Pizza Luce we ordered because it was right there. And so that was my first experience with Pizza Luce. Definitely one of the more can't-miss places downtown.
Especially if you're going there for beers, the Wiley. And
yeah.
Zach used to be there. Zach's my boy. He's a Cubs fan. Those guys always are awesome. And pizza at 11 o'clock at night after a ball game is never
Who
terrible.
Can beat it? So when you got traded here, it was actually kind of funny. I was working my awful day job, the one that Tom has since rescued me from. I was working at the UPS store, and I had a call from an area code I didn't recognize. It said somewhere in Massachusetts. And I was like, well, probably someone wanting me to pay student loans because who wants to do that? But anyway, I shot it to voicemail because I didn't want to be bothered. I had much bigger things going on, like shipping boxes. And I go back, and it's Boston Herald call, and they're like, hey, we need a reporter on the scene for Uke's first game in Minneapolis because he got traded during the game.
Right.
Like, I think he hit a triple, got taken off the field.
Right.
To the,
there was a hug watch.
Yep, hug watch. And so, like, we need somebody out there. Can you cover for us? And I'm like, heck yeah. They're like,
yeah.
Oh, and we'll give you $150 or $200 or something. I'm like,
nice.
I'm busy making, like, $10 an hour managing this UPS store. So that's about half a paycheck for me to write about baseball.
And yeah.
If anybody who knows me knows I was put on the earth to write and talk about baseball in my college journalism professor jokes that my major at Northwestern here in the city, not Northwestern, Chicago, was baseball. So for me, it was natural to jump. And actually, it was funny. We talked to him after the game. He's like, man, everyone here is so much nicer than Boston. And so we probably actually met then, but I didn't know it. I was such a rube then. I still kind of am. But it's cool to see the parallelism and you know, the fact that once his Boston tenure was over, that was kind of the beginning of the end for him. But, I mean, was he a good player for Chicago?
You know what? He was a guy that – he was okay. Pardon me. He was okay, but he was so beat up physically by that point. And, you know, he got $12 million the next year from the Yankees, and I think he played like 15 to 20 games.
Well, then he went and played Japan, and nothing happened there.
He was just so beat up and worn down because he was such a give-it-all player. And he provided them with the spark, but that team just ran out of gas. Chris Sale and Jose Quintana were both.
Wasn't Orlando Hudson on that team?
Yeah,
too?
Yeah. Actually, had gone. Orlando Hudson got released by the Padres while I was still covering the Padres, and I come to Chicago White Sox, and there's Orlando Hudson, and he gave me a fist pump, and I was the guy that broke the story about him being released, and I was like, this guy doesn't want to see me. He gives me a fist pump. He's like, man, so glad to be out of there.
Well, what was funny? Were you saying same thing?
No.
San Diego's great. You probably love San Diego.
If I could have got this job in San Diego, I might never have left. So
one of my favorite Orlando Hudson stories was he spent 2010 with the Twins. Came back in 2011 in an interleague series. Did he go straight to San Diego afterwards? I can't remember.
Yeah.
And he goes in the clubhouse and he goes, man, you bleep bleeps aren't going to come say hey, because it was the second game of the series and none of the Twins had gone over to say hi to him. He goes, man, you bleepity bleepers aren't going to say hi. Not a single person looked up at him and he walked back out of the clubhouse. And apparently he had worn thin with the Twins. And I think
he may have done the same with the Padres. I don't think they were happy with their investment, and the White Sox were looking for anything at third base at that time, and you know, I think they gave up Zach Stewart to get Youkilis, and
wow.
And you know, he had already kind of, it was just get what you can, and
the but Red that was Sox the Brent Morrell era,
right? And the Red Sox had also had so many issues in the clubhouse that year. That was, I think, the Bobby
chicken. Was that the chicken pizza and beer?
No, it was the Bobby Valentine the following year with Adrian Gonzalez, yep. And they were having a hectic clubhouse. So Youkilis was just thrilled to get out, and he did provide spark. But I mean, you know, you had AJ Pierzynski get injured towards the end of the year. Adam Dunn hurt his oblique in early September. Canerico he got hit in the head in June, and then got clipped also in the head. I think it was Terrence Gore running the bases, or Dyson got a second concussion and his back. So like, you're talking about him going from hitting 399 in May to being, I never saw Paul Konerko hit above 250 yet from that point on in his career, and they just ran out of gas. And it was a real fun team, but they, you know, Sale and Quintana were so young. If it was Sale and Quintana from like 2014, that team might have won the division.
Well, I think Jake Peavy was on that team,
they
too.
They traded for Francisco Liriano. And
the Twins got Eduardo Escobar on that deal, which,
did.
Thank you very much. He is the best.
He's the
best in the clubhouse.
He's still missed by the White Sox coaching staff.
I bet.
He was that guy. They just loved his energy. And I totally understand it. I was only around him a little bit, and I could see. I think they actually almost – a couple people were crying when that happened because
– I savaged the deal at the time because his numbers weren't that good. But.
Right, but he's proven – and he kills the White Sox too. So it's Liriano. Hey, the White Sox were onto something. Pittsburgh did okay with him.
And now he's in Toronto doing not that much. Do you remember – this is a pop quiz. Do you remember who the other guy was involved in the Liriano trade? Because I forgot his name until just
I do. It was the pitcher they got from the Padres.
The lefty.
They got for the Quentin trade, and he only made one start for them.
Pedro Hernandez.
He pitched at Fenway earlier that year and got lit up.
A lefty with no stuff and not good command is going to get killed at Fenway.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, he probably made 10 starts for the Twins and was just awful. Nice guy. Great guy.
But
awful
that
pitcher.
That just kind of gives you an idea of the players that were going back and forth. You know, you're not expecting a whole lot, and that's what the White Sox, they were buying low on everything to try and fill holes, and
smart,
they've been doing
though.
It for a long time. Yeah, and it works sometimes, and then sometimes it doesn't, like last year, and, you know, then you get stuck with guys that are replacement players.
Who could you be talking about, maybe James Shields?
Well, Shields was, you know, man, that just backfired. He's been really good.
But who couldn't have seen him opting in? I mean,
right, exactly.
Might be the first guy ever to opt into a deal.
Exactly. No, and he's been... You know, small sample, four starts. He's been much better this year than he was last year. But, man, I mean, that just blew up in their faces, especially with Tatis now, one of the best prospects in the Padre farm system. I mean, man, the White Sox farm system is loaded right now.
Yeah.
If they had Tatis, I mean, they would be whatever's above one. They would be like, that's how much
– Create, you know, a new environment for them.
Yeah. I mean, it's an impressive system, and it's probably only going to get much better because they're going to keep going down first.
Yeah. It's not a Matt Latos four-start sample size for Shields. He's at least looking competent.
Well, he had, I think, 16 strikeouts in those first 16 innings. So
that's
the stuff
good.
Is good. He's gone – he's re-kind of drawn himself up. I mean, he's thrown a curveball that – MLB game day identifies as an Evis pitch at times.
Wow.
You know, so he's throwing different variances of the curveball. He's really pounding the outside corner with the fastball.
Is he 88, 89, or where is
he? Yeah, it's not, you know, he's had a 91 or 92 up there, but it's not the same old guy. But he's kind of reinvented himself, and he's smart enough to do it. And, You know, I'm sure there's going to be days where the command is off and he's going to get lit up. It's just, it's inevitable. But he's done a good job so far.
Good clubhouse guy? I mean, Royals raved about him for that.
Yeah, he definitely, he fit in well last year, and they love having him as an example for young guys too, especially if they trade Jose Quintana. You know, I mean, they need somebody around. That was the first time in his career that he's been on the disabled list. He just came back on Sunday in Toronto and gave up 3 runs, gave up 2 homers.
The Shield special, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, to back up just a little bit before we more hammer on this team, what was it like covering A.J. Pierzynski?
I only had him for 4 months, and I had heard the worst stuff in the world.
Really? Because I feel like he's almost like that kind of guy that you love if he's on your side and hate if he's not.
Well, and I'm going from media perspective.
Right, so media, nobody's really actually on your side, I guess, technically.
Right.
So I suppose it is probably you're not on his side, so it probably could be bad.
I'd heard horror stories, and it didn't register. Like, and it's also, you know, you're talking to a guy who maybe thinks he's towards the end, and so maybe he's doing this knowing that his next job's going to be in the media. But
Goodwill.
Yeah, he stayed on for another 3 years, and I really appreciated his honesty. He'd let you know if you sucked, but he wasn't, you know.
You mean if he sucked or if you sucked?
No, if you sucked. If he didn't like the question, he'd let you know. And
I actually like that because there's a lot of nonsense in pressers.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I actually enjoyed the time. He said stuff. Anybody that says stuff is good with me. You know, we get so much watered down quotes these days. So he was a leader, and you know what? I mean, hey, you had to stay on your toes around him for sure, but I got no complaints.
Yeah, you can't give him that batting practice fastball. Hey, talk about the game. Kick your ass if you did that.
Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate guys like that. That keeps me on my toes, and I like the idea that I have to be sharp. But also when the camera guys start asking questions, like, get the hell out of here.
You know what, though? I'll give this. The camera guys, sometimes those questions give you the best quotes just because the reaction is so – there's some stuff that goes through and you're like, really, you got to ask that? But sometimes those questions are so basic and simple, they get you the best response because of the exasperated look on the player's face when the answer comes. It's kind of funny. It's give and take.
So a big part of why they've been so respectable, the White Sox I'm talking about here, has been unlikely contributors. Yeah. I think people expected Jose Abreu to be great. It seems to me like I feel like he's kind of cooled off lately, or maybe
he has a little bit. Yeah, he hit his first home run the other day in like almost a month, but he's still hitting well. Like, he was hitting everything hard. You think about where he was last year at this point. He had 11 home runs at the end of July, and he was league average at the end of July. And mm-hmm. His last 2 months, he took off and finished with 25 and 100 and hit like 290. Had on paper a good season when really it was a good 2 months. This has been a much more consistent across the board season. It's not outstanding. He still, weirdly enough, does not have a home run at home. All 11 of his home runs have come.
Eddie Rosario has hit all of his home runs at Target Field,
which is crazy when you think about it. Because, I mean, I would say that I'm not a home run guy. I could not hit a home run. Based off of you versus TC and Rhett, I think you and Rhett have a shot at hitting home run at Guaranteed Rate Ballpark. It's, you know, you got a chance. It's an easy place to hit a home run. And Abreu hasn't hit one there yet. So I expect him to hit quite a few the rest of the way.
What is his position on this team in the position of transition? That was a weird rhyme.
No, he's a huge leader.
So at 30, they still view him as part of the next wave?
Well, I mean, they just signed Luis Robert, 19-year-old Cuban phenomenon.
Beast. He's going to be good.
And they have Yoan Moncada in the wings. Probably is up.
So they
in
want
August.
Him to probably be the ombudsman or whatever you want to call
it. I mean, this guy is by far the best example you could have. And you get a lot of guys from Cuba who you don't know what you're getting. You get Puig. Puig has been all over the map.
He's a loose cannon.
He is. And Abreu is...
Well, you guys had the guy who...
The White Sox have done very well.
Who was the
Cuba.
Third baseman that ended up playing in the outfield? And then
Diane Vicieto.
I always wanted him and Sam Fold to be on the same team for a Sam and Diane platoon. Sorry, that's terrible.
No, that's... Some pun people are going to be very happy about that one. But, yeah. Like,
the pun people.
You know, he's amazing as far as the leadership quality. I mean, on the Spanish-speaking side of the house, he is the guy that everybody looks to. And when he talks, everybody listens. And his English has gotten better, which is really helping him a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's starting to become what they hoped he would be all along. But the dude is just the best teammate possible, a tireless worker, dedicated to his craft almost to a fault. There were times last year I think he was probably working too hard to find solutions. But you put all that together with a guy that just rakes. And
it's a total package.
He is. And I can see why they'd want Moncada to come up and work around him, because Moncada has the best tools that have been in the system in a long time. And he's really impressed them with the way he has tried to cut down the defensive, better angles to the bag, get more on his throws on turns, that kind of thing. They've really worked with him on footwork, and they want, I'm guaranteeing you, they would love to have him hang around Abreu for a month or two just to see what the best guy does. Because when the best guy is the tireless worker too, and you see that, mm-hmm. you know, I got to do that too.
It sounds like Robinson Cano to me. I know that people think he looks lazy on the field, but the fact of the matter is it's kind of like A-Rod back in the day was a hard worker. He'd be the first guy there. And again, you wouldn't necessarily see it because you can't get into the park as far as fans are concerned, but Cano is that kind of baseball nerd. In fact, the Lookout Landing people we had on 2 weeks ago said he's a baseball nerd. He ferociously loves and consumes baseball.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to think about what that means to some of these guys.
Abreu will do when he's going wrong. He'll put his iPad up on the indoor cage and video himself and go back. And then after taking his session, go back and watch it just to see what he was doing. And like, he's at the gym 9 hours before the game and is building at home, and then goes to the ballpark and works out a little bit there and does early. He's a beast, man. And he's been well worth every cent of the investment. His defense has never been even probably above average. It's probably average at best. Mm-hmm. That's his drawback, and that's probably why they might have trouble trading him, because you're limiting your market to DHs only at that point. And I think the internal value is very high on him and probably not worth trading him.
I think Irvin Santana does some of those things for the Twins, especially on the Barrios front. And then they also have Fernando Romero at AA.
Yeah.
Again, You could be accused of lazy analysis, but I do think it matters, the Spanish speakers, how they congregate to one another, because it is a form of their identity, because they're coming to a place where they're not feeling at home.
Right.
And, like, I don't know if you read the ESPN article that came out yesterday, like the wide-sweeping 50 players interviewed for all these different things about what baseball means to Spanish players.
Yeah, I did not.
You're going to need to, and I would advise people, I mean, I'm not trying to tell you what to do, yeah. but I'm advising people listening to this, run to your computer and read it. And it's not necessarily articles. It's series of excerpts, like from, I think Marley Rivera collected a
yeah.
lot of them.
Good
and it
reporter,
was like,
good reporter.
What was it like for like Giovanni Soto, or not Giovanni Soto, but I'm trying to think of who the catcher of the Twins, Rene Rivera, to get a credit card. And like he's like, the catcher for the Cubs, Montero, he said he went to an ATM for the first time and took out $100. And he's like, why are they stealing $2.50 from me? It took me a long time to trust ATMs after that point. Like, they never had it.
And, no, it totally makes sense. That's why Rick Renteria is a great hire for the White Sox, because he can at least communicate in the same language with a lot of these guys who have to be, you know, have to figure out how to go to a restaurant and be able to order food. And
yeah.
I think, you know, this article, I mean, the ball got rolling on awareness towards this when that movie Sugar came out, you know.
I have the movie. I haven't seen it. I was in Spanish class when it came out, and my teacher told me I had to watch it because she knew
it.
It is.
It's a great movie. I mean, just think about the idea that if you're going to a foreign country, you don't speak the language, you're 17, and you can't go to a restaurant and order a plate of eggs or anything other than eggs, because eggs is the only thing
Huevos.
You know how to say.
Exactly. Huevos.
And so it's, you know, there's a huge transition for a lot of guys, and I mean, Abreu came from Cuba and just he made it the quick transition. But I mean, hearing the stories about Puig just sitting in the hotel watching TV because he had never, you know, all the different channels and just being, you know, fascinated.
Enthralled, basically.
I mean, yeah, it's a total shift in lifestyle. And you have all these different new opportunities. And I can see why it's a big deal.
And a pocket full of money besides.
Right. And Renteria at least eliminates the idea that players don't know if their manager is getting what they're saying. And I think that's a huge thing when you think about all the pressures ball players have.
Well, look at Roberto Clemente's career and how misunderstood he was because they didn't know what he was saying. He didn't understand.
It's important to have that communication in a sport where the Spanish-speaking population is as high as it is. And I think the White Sox are going to benefit from it. I know that that's something they tried to play up with Luis Robert, is this is a guy that is a fluent Spanish speaker. And they were up against the Cardinals, and Mike Matheny also speaks Spanish.
Catchers speak a lot of languages,
They do. And I think it's an advantage that the White Sox are going to try and kind of take, you know, use for their purposes the next couple of years.
That's why I feel like, because Paul Molitor is by definition a lame duck manager and that he doesn't have an extension in place. And I think when two guys come to a team, they have a list in their mind of who they'd like to hire. Yeah. Let's just say it doesn't pan out, where a Spanish speaker might make sense. And the name that I keep coming back to, and I don't know if it'll ever happen though, Sandy Alomar Jr.
He's going
to
get a manager.
The Cleveland
job.
Connection is too much for me to ignore from Falvey. Obviously has the chops, former catcher. He's got all the things you check off.
And he's been on Terry Francona's staff for a couple of years now. That's, you know.
That's monstrous credentials.
Absolutely.
I just feel like that's the guy to watch.
I thought he was going to actually be on. I thought the White Sox, that he was high on their list.
Yeah.
And Renteria was higher because Renteria was on staff already. They loved what they saw from him. But Sandy Alomar is going to get a job at some point, and it's going to be a good hire for some team.
What happened the other day when Renteria got thrown out? Wasn't that a check swing for Avi Garcia?
Yeah, he loves defending his players. Like, he has their backs. We saw it in spring training. I think it was the first game. Carson Fulmer's pitching. Carson Fulmer kind of shows the ump up and, like, does a little arm thing. Renteria races out, knowing he's like basically going and trying to catch Carson
Fulmer.
It's
him or me.
Hug him.
It's him or me.
And that's what I think he was trying to do, and he didn't have enough time because the other day Avi threw up the arms, and then he did the whole points at the eyes like Robert De Niro and the Ben Stiller
Meet the Parents.
The Circle of Trust.
That was the joke. Okay, I read the tweet that said he's not in his Circle of Trust.
Yeah,
now it's coming together for me.
Quick ejection. I mean, it was so fast. I think Renteria was trying to get out there before that happened. He didn't have a shot, so he got his money's worth and basically got the boot too.
Sounds pretty humorous, though.
Oh, it's hilarious. Especially when the hat got fired down.
In our off the record conversations, though, you kind of intimated this, but it feels like it wasn't terribly surprising they moved on from Robin Ventura, right?
Yeah, you know,
I didn't feel like he had much energy.
No, I don't. You know, it's funny. He actually got ejected more ever than Ozzie Guillen did.
Crazy.
Really?
He had like 7-1 year, and he's the last guy to kick dirt on an umpire's foot like 4 years ago on the home plate rule. And, you know, Robin, I think he gave off that vibe, but he's just kind of a relaxed guy. But, this is just a different team, and Robin is a guy that if you gave him a clubhouse full of professionals,
I was just about to ask if there's a team he could manage.
There's a lot of Joe Torre in him where he knows how to manage personalities, and you give him 20 very seasoned personalities, he's going to do well with that because he knows how to kind of manage guys that way. And this is a teaching team, you know, so many young guys and so many more coming.
It's an instructional thing.
You know, he had no experience as a coach coming up, really. And Renteria is all about player development. Spent a ton of time as a manager in the minors. You know, worked his way up as a first base
coach.
Basically
the anti-Molitor.
Yeah. There's a lot of similarities between Robin and Paul Molitor in just their experience. And I think it works well with veteran teams. The 2012 White Sox loved Ventura. They had Ozzie. It was time for Ozzie to move on at that time. You know, the divorce between Ozzie and Kenny was really ugly, and I think players just wanted something a little bit more calm, and Robin did a great job of that. And really, they liked him. I mean, Canerco, another Paul.
Yeah, there you go.
Canerco swore by him and said, this is what we needed right now. And it worked for a while, and it ran out of gas. And they were going this direction. I think it was just time.
Is there a way that you think Ozzie could get back into the game? I feel like if you wanted a sideshow, like Tampa Bay would be the place, or a guy to manage a bunch of ragtag misfits. Although I'm not saying Kevin Cash has done a bad job, and I'm not saying I didn't think Joe Maddon was great there. Joe Maddon was phenomenal, and we talked about him off the air as far as how he keeps topping what he does I won't say for the attention, but for the stories. Do you think there's a way Ozzie can get back into the game, or is he kind of?
I hope so. I mean, baseball could use as many personalities as possible,
right? Especially of that, you know, with his ethnicity, because it's good for the game. It's good to help those players come along.
Absolutely. There's some talk that he helped Avisal Garcia this offseason, that he kind of lit a fire under him, telling him, you aren't very good.
And I could see him being like with
he's
more
honest,
swear
he's
words.
Brutal. That's the thing, and that's where it's going to take a team that has some flexibility. Like, you know, Joe Maddon is the showman, and he bites the bullet for his team and takes pressure off his team by talking in the media. Ozzie does that. That's a huge advantage for some teams. I think that you saw it with Buddy Ryan with the Jets. He would always try to absorb, and I think that teams could use that. And Ozzie is a very intelligent baseball guy. And hopefully he gets another job.
What
Who
if it's
knows?
With the Twins?
Hey.
Oh, my God.
Hey, I mean, talk about probably drawing some interest. But, you know, it's going to be weird because I experienced the other way about that. Justin Morneau. I know you guys all thought that was weird last year. Love Justin Morneau. I wish it wasn't the end of the career that he came up. I wish it was a better White Sox team because
he's a good dude.
Oh, man. One of my favorites, and he was only there for 3 months.
Who's your favorite player to talk to all time? Any team you've covered in the big leagues?
Adam Dunn, without
wow.
Adam Dunn,
the big donkey.
One, he had a great perspective on everything. Two, if you talk to him about his football, he was cocky as hell. Like he
you mean
just,
fantasy football? Or?
No. He was he played Texas football.
Okay, okay.
I'm the second best quarterback in Chicago behind Jay Cutler.
Wow. Really?
He would say wow. that. He said it on an ESPN radio interview on air.
Imagine trying to tackle that dude in the backfield. Holy smokes. Yeah. It's like Jared Lorenzen on steroids.
Exactly. And the best parts were, like, you could just BS with him. He was great. Like, he was fantasy football A. B, the best bet I ever made was Warriors are playing the Clippers. It was 4 years ago in the playoffs, and the Clippers were the favorites. So I got plus 1.5 games in the series.
Nice.
And whoever lost had to do something what the other one said. And I got him to send out a tweet saying, CSN Hayes is the greatest beat writer that has ever covered me in my entire career.
That's awesome.
And how many followers did you get from that?
I don't think I got very many.
Oh, man.
But it was...
That's equity, though.
Just a good, easy dude to talk to and, you know, just happened to be a really good player, too.
How about now? I mean, for me, Chris Jimenez, and I don't know, I've been tweeting the link ad nauseum.
Yeah.
He and I did a video chat, and I think it turned out good. I think we put some graphics on it with our names and stuff.
He was popular with the Cleveland guys last year,
Oh, man, yeah. So Jordan Bastion was in visiting him because he said, we're going to punch the bully in the mouth, and then they get swept in 4 games. And he was just, you know, he was just joshing around. So Jimenez is my favorite guy this year. I mean, I got guys, Phil Hughes and I, we chit-chat a lot. I have got a few guys. Dozier's really good.
Yeah.
You know, guys that recognize me, know my name, which
yeah.
for me as a guy who doesn't go on the road is big. Who's your guy in the clubhouse this year that's like...
Well, I love Abreu.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish there was more. I wish it didn't have to always be with an interpreter there.
Yeah.
And I can do a little small talk with him, a little, but not a lot. Un poquito. But
muy poquito.
He has a great sense of humor, and you can talk to him about a wide variety of subjects and... He's just a good guy. On this current team, that's the guy I like the most. I like Derek Holland a lot. He's a character. He's just kind of hilarious in a keep it loose kind of way. Frazier's good, but Abreu's probably my favorite.
So we know a lot about Derek Holland. Seen a lot of him from the Texas days. So there may be some reminiscing between him and Thad Levine at some point in this series. David Holmberg going for the White Sox tomorrow. What can you tell us about David Holmberg?
Well, he was a second-round pick of the White Sox in 2009. Got traded, I believe, with Daniel Hudson for the – oh, man. I'm not even going to try to remember what trade that was. But
I'm going to pull it up while you
talk. Maybe it was Edwin Jackson. It was Edwin Jackson, and they were trying to flip Edwin Jackson to the Nationals, and the Nationals backed out.
Holy smokes. Okay. He was also part of a big deal after that. That's why I got confused, because there's – Justin Choate and Heath Bell and Ryan Hannigan
and
Todd
Bryant. Right. He was so part of the
big three-way deal on December 2013.
Yeah, to get Heath Bell to the Diamondbacks, or was that Heath Bell out of the Diamondbacks?
Heath Bell to the Rays.
Yeah, that's right.
Post-apocalyptic Heath Bell.
Yeah. I had good Heath Bell in San Diego for 5 years.
Man, he was really good.
Oh, 2007, he was.
Wasn't Mike Adams back in those days? And
Mike Adams came in 08.
They've had some incredible bullpens.
The 2010 bullpen was Heath Bell in the ninth.
Was Nick Vinson in that bullpen?
No, he was not yet. Heath Bell in the ninth, Luke Gregerson in the seventh, and Mike Adams in the eighth.
Look at
that 2010 Padres team. And just know that team deserved had no way of being in the race until the final day and lost on the final day to the Giants.
Well, we emphasize how little bullpens matter, but at the same time, also they matter a lot.
They do. When you're the Orioles and you can just lock down a game and make them six-inning games.
You
and
said 2010?
2010 Padres.
Well, and the 2009 Padres, 2009 Adams had a 0.73.
Right.
But the next year, 1.76. I mean, so three straight years of sub-2 ERAs. And yeah, you look at that bullpen. They also had Kevin Correa.
Yeah. Yeah,
Kevin Correa was in Minnesota.
He was starter. Yeah,
I'm just being a dick. Joe Thatcher had a crazy year. Mujica.
Yep,
Mujica had a crazy year that year. This is one of my favorite years among relievers. Really decent ERA, 3.62, tons of strikeouts, no walks, 14 home runs allowed in under 70 innings. I'm like,
that's right.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, amazing. That team. That was Matt Latos' rookie season. And he was a stud. But
off the radar, Tim Stauffer, Ryan Webb, Ernesto Friere,
all
these guys had just crazy years. And some of these guys are still kicking around. Webb is the guy that gets DFA'd, you know, like, quite frequently, like every other day.
Exactly.
Friere just left the Yankees AAA system to go sign with the...
I think he just got called up by the Rangers, actually.
Yeah, I think you're right. And there was some talk about if the Twins would be interested because their bullpen is very, very bad.
But so back on Holmberg.
Sorry.
Yeah, believe me.
This happens to me a lot.
It does. But Holmberg, 2009 second round pick, came back to them this year. Maybe it was last year. Came back to them as
like a minor league
depth.
Goal?
Right. Yeah. And started the year at Charlotte. And he was going to be a starter, but they have so many prospects. Basically went to the bullpen, started with the White Sox this season in the bullpen. And he came up in some point in May or maybe
he was a lefty too. I didn't know that.
And really just pitched well out of the bullpen. And they've kind of built him up to be a 4 to 5 inning guy. Because, you know, this weekend when Miguel Gonzalez, sorry.
The shoulder, right?
Yeah, it's so hard to keep up with the injuries with them right now. They have had four starters go on the DL so far. You had Rodon start the year on the DL. Mm-hmm. Shields went on in April. Dylan Covey was there to replace Rodon. He's a Rule 5 draft pick. He's on the DL now, and then Miguel Gonzalez just went on this weekend. So they've had this long run of it, and Holmberg has just kind of been a fill-in guy so far. He probably would have been out of the rotation, and James Shields would have been in. But
would he have stayed up or would he have gotten sent out?
He would have probably gone in the bullpen again. Nope. I think he's done enough. He's a lefty, and you know, I think that that's something that they're hoping that, you know, he pans out, and he's pitched pretty well.
So Jose Quintana starting the getaway day game.
Always has trouble with the Twins too.
Yeah. He's had a weird year. I feel like he's obviously you look at the 5.07 ERA, 4.35 FIP. The strikeouts are there. I've always felt like he's a weird pitcher in that he comes from the left side. He's got fairly good velo, but he doesn't blow you away with it. He's just solid.
Right.
And this year he just
hits spots.
Yeah, and this year he just has not. I think he hides the fastball or he does something with the fastball because it's consistently low OPS against on it. So it's something about spin rate or something that he's doing. What's going on this year, though? Because I feel like there was a short spike where he was pretty good and then has kind of been up and down.
I can't even give him a short spike where he's been very good. He's been, the last three have been decent. And two of the last three have been very good, but he would go opening day. He got rocked. He came back, had a decent one after that. Then he gets rocked again. Then he, you know, it's been up down the whole time. And you know,
it's like he's doing those football drills where you're doing the up and down in the hot
it's happened
summer heat
a lot. And I think he had a one hitter in Seattle about a month ago, 8 innings, got no decision.
That offense is tough.
Yeah.
They were down
that weekend.
With,
I think Cano
was, it
was
Cruz
out
and Segura and they've had some guys, but even then Ben Gamel's having a crazy year.
Yeah.
So to shut down the Mariners in pretty much any iteration is at least noteworthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he came back and he gave up 15 runs his next two starts, and one was against Sale in a showdown, and everybody thought it was going to be a low scoring game, and then it's 13-7 between Jose Quintana and Chris Sale.
Sale's quotes after that game were epic.
Yeah, it was definitely. That's what we missed those quotes.
He was a real cut up.
We missed those.
I'm sorry, that was bad. What was that series? What was that situation like? Do you think that was the nail in the coffin for him in Chicago, or is that just a non-entity and it was going to happen anyway?
I think that when they got blown away by the offer from the Red Sox,
I think you'd have to take that.
It was easier to do it because of the stuff. I think that stuff probably, they knew that they were not going to do what he wanted. He wanted to be a competitor. He wanted to win, and I think they knew.
He's a scary guy. Like, if you look at him in the eyes, he's wiry. He just looks intimidating.
And I really think he wants to win now, and I don't think that they thought they could pull it off. It was just going to be too hard to patch things together and win. And so the first guy that's got to go if you're going to make a if you're going to do a fire sale is Chris Sale. I don't think you want Chris Sale there being upset.
Ripping in the wind.
Right. I think he knew it was time. I think they knew it was time. It just all added up. And I don't think they knew that this guy's a competitor. He has this fiery side. They knew he was going to erupt once in a while. He erupted a couple times last year, and a lot of it caught some publicity. And I think that it probably added up. But at the same time, you get that offer, you're taking that offer. So
well, it was a great deal. They did right by him in that they let him go. You know, they're like, we'll try to build around you. If it's unsuccessful, we'll let you go.
Right.
Kind of like Kevin Love here in the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
Or even Kevin Garnett.
I think Quintana's felt some of that pressure, thinking, well, if Sale's gone, if Adam Eaton's gone, he's heard the rumors all year. I think the human side is playing into it because Abreu had a lot of that stuff going on last year with his family, and you know he had to testify in that trial this March, and there's just a lot of stuff going around, and you see him as a freer guy this year, and I think Quintana is kind of bogged down, but he's come around the last couple starts. He was really, you know, he's a guy that lives with that edge. And if he is spotting this fastball on the edge and can keep his curveball out there and then mix it in and do a good job of that, he's very effective. He's hard to hit. You're just not getting solid contact off him. And he's been in the middle a ton at times, and people have made him pay
for it.
For
that, yeah.
Right.
For me, he's the poor man's Cole Hamels, because if you look at their peripherals, they're actually rather similar. And yet he probably is guaranteed $100 million less than Hamels from this point on.
Yeah.
He is kind of that Yeti or that abominable snowman in that we keep talking about pitchers the Twins could acquire, and everyone says, oh, well, I want to get a great pitcher. Okay, well, if you get a great pitcher, they probably don't have much time on left of their contract. Well, get someone who's under a lot of control. Well, then teams don't want to trade those guys.
Right.
So it's like, well, what about Chris Archer? First of all, the Rays are maybe even a better team than the Twins, first of all.
Yeah.
Second of all, he's on an incredible contract, and when they trade guys, it's about money. Third of all, who in the hell are you actually going to trade for him when it's a farm system that's been ravaged by graduations? You know, Byron Buxton,
right.
Miguel Sano, Eddie Rosario, Max Kepler, they're all in the big leagues. You know, you're not trading. So you're looking for that Yeti in the wilderness, and that guy might be Quintana, who I don't know that his star has faded that much.
I don't think it is. I think the teams that are interested still, I think if the Yankees pursue him, that's the best thing in the world for the White Sox, and I think the Yankees like him.
You're going to get Clint Frazier out of that deal?
I don't know.
Because they don't need the outfielders if they got Judge and Hicks, and if they sign Harper, which everyone thinks they're going to do.
Joel Sherman wrote a great article about how they're about to have a 40-man roster crunch coming up soon. Like, they have a bunch of guys.
I feel like the Dodgers are like that, too.
Well, yeah.
Great
players. If you load up, that'll happen to the White Sox eventually. At some point, you have to start taking the younger guys.
Parting it out.
You know, and you've got seven guys right now at AAA who probably are going to be on your 40-man in the next year or two.
Yep.
Where are you going to make space for those guys? And they will, because they're going to have an exodus of free agents. They have like six free agents on this roster. And
sure.
But at some point, you have to start going to the younger class, because if you get guys, we saw it. Dan Uggla was a 40-man, left off the 40-man, was a Rule 5 and starred the next year. And Arizona couldn't find room for him at the time. And that stuff happens.
Or,
it's very
Delino
real.
DeShields on the who was he with? Was it Houston?
Yeah.
I think it was Houston and then Texas, and he was real good too.
Right.
That
stuff happens.
That's why I thought the Dodgers made sense for Dozier, because they could trade maybe like a De Leon, a Brock Stewart, and then a third piece.
Right.
Because Brock Stewart with the super good peripherals and all that stuff, and the Twins need starters. They need a second baseman. I thought a deal made so much sense there. You know, and they could start, you know, picking and choosing. Maybe a Trace Thompson, who you are obviously familiar with from the White Sox days a little bit too. It just never came to fruition.
And the thing is you look at the Yankees, the Red Sox, those kinds of teams, they're up against the salary threshold.
Yep.
Jose Quintana is going to make $29.85 million over the next 3 years.
That's gold right there.
If he was a free agent this offseason, he would get $5 million guaranteed.
He'd get almost that per year.
Right. He would walk out with a minimum 5 years, $20 million average through the rest of his deal. And so the White Sox are still in a good spot. I mean, this is a guy that 3.30 ERA for the last 4 years. He's not an ace.
Right.
Don't package him as an ace.
Like Irvin Santana is, obviously, right? We had that discussion too. We'll talk about that in a minute.
But he is a pretty solid two, and he's a definite three on any playoff team. I think if you.
Yep.
He's a two on a lot of teams, really, and he's a good two on a lot of teams. Not a lot of home runs, doesn't walk a ton of guys. And this is all in a hitter's park. Guaranteed rate is a total hitter's park. 3.30 ERA for 4 years. And I think when you look at that, you go, all right, give me 200 innings of 330. I'll take that.
And he could pitch at Yankee Stadium, especially, too, right, with the amount of pitching that we've seen fall by the wayside this year with guys having tough years. Johnny Cueto's not particularly good. John Lester has struggled at times. Jake Arrieta. The other funny thing would be Quintana going back to the Yankees.
And absolutely.
You say back to the Yankees. What are you talking about? I think he was considered an org filler, and they just kind of let him go, right?
They did. He was a minor league free agent that the White Sox signed in 2011.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And they liked him so much, they're like, oh, wow, we're going to put this kid in the – minors. Maybe it was 2012 that they did it. Mm-hmm. They put him at Double A and started the year. They loved him in spring training, almost made the club out of camp, put him at Double A. He did well. He came up for an injury, took off, never slowed down. And he even got better last year with the All-Star game. Some guys, they finally feel like they belong when they get that first All-Star nod. He was one of those guys, and you know, he really believed it. And so it's been a very strange year to see this season, because this is so uncharacteristic of him. The stuff is still there. You saw him in the WBC, one hit the U.S. team for 17 batters or 18 batters. It's elite, man. Elite, no. Very, very good.
You can't say elite on the U of M campus without paying a fine, too, because of P.J. Fleck. We're right on the campus of the U. When you look at the rest of this division, and before this last series, when people are saying, oh, the Twins can really galvanize themselves, I'm like, or they could wake up a sleeping giant because they're still going to lose this division by 10 games. Do you get the sense Cleveland's going to run away with this? And I say yes because, first of all, look at how talented they are.
Right.
Second of all, they've got nothing from their starters, and that's not going to remain the same. Danny Salazar, if he gets healthy, still has something left to give.
Yeah.
Trevor Bauer's not a complete dumpster fire, though at times he can be.
Right.
Corey Kluber was hurt for a while. He missed almost the entire month of May. I just think they win 95 and everyone else is chasing them at 85 and lower.
I mean, Edwin Encarnacion just started to wake up when the White Sox were in there last weekend.
The Twins got throttled by him and Jose Ramirez, and then even the center fielder, not Bradley Zimmer, the other guy. They came over in the trade.
Yeah, man.
Whatever. Oh, no, it is Bradley Zimmer. I'm thinking of Clint Frazier. I can never remember the two. It was Bradley Zimmer that they have. Yeah, you can't keep that guy off base either. They've got the depth to destroy teams like the Twins.
And they have the best player in the division at shortstop, who's only hitting 260 when we were there last week.
804 OPS, and then he hit a home run off Alan Buznitz, and it was like he'd seen four sliders, and after the fourth one, he's like, this is enough. I'm done. And he hits it out.
I love that kid. That's my favorite player probably in the American League right now.
Yep.
Lindor is the personality took off at the World Series. Got to interview him a couple times because it was the Cubs. And
he's
kid. Man, he and Baez were so excited to be there, and it just reflected in all their interviews.
Kid and candy store, right?
Totally. And they just happen to be absolute studs on the field. Like, both teams are so lucky to have these kids at 23 be around for a long time. You mentioned Jordan Bastion. I was like, has Lindor always been this good of an interview? He's like, dude, he was born this way. He came up as a 21-year-old, and he was saying this stuff then. And I mean, that when you have that leadership, and yet he also knew how to kind of duck out of the spotlight when it was appropriate.
Yep.
You know, that's a whole package right there. And he's having an okay season right now. He's got so much more of a ceiling to reach there. And so you look at that, and yes, I mean, the Indians are the class of this division. They've had some struggling times so far, but I mean, I think they win by a lot. I like what the Twins have done a lot. I love the power potential in the lineup. It's really scary. To think that Vargas a couple of years ago was looking like he was going to be the guy, and you know, then Miguel Sano comes along, and he's even better. And it's an impressive team.
Have I ever told you my Lindor love story? I suppose I haven't, because we've never been talking about the Indians for any reason. I saw him as a 16-year-old. I shouldn't be talking about him as a 16-year-old, I guess, like that. But I saw him on the USA U18 team here in the Twin Cities. They played the top town ball team. And so it was the USA team with Lance McCullers and Matt Barnes and Blake Swihart, Bubba Starling, and all these guys that have since gone on to be either really good or at least average big league players. Tony Walters, who catches for the Rockies. And watching him take infield, I've never seen a better defensive shortstop, and he was 16.
Yeah.
Just everything was just calculated and smooth.
And now all of a sudden he's got power, too, go with it. And he's only 23.
Unbelievable.
Dusty Baker says you get your man muscles when you're 27. He's got a long way to go in this career, and as long as he can kind of maintain that skinny frame but gain a little more muscle, man, he's going to hit a ton of home runs.
Let me ask you about a few players before we wrap up. So what's going on? I mean, Carlos, now Yoelmer Sanchez, having a nice year at second base.
Yeah.
Does it feel like he's becoming someone he wasn't before? Is he on a hot stretch? You know, it's 200-plus plate appearances, so it can be kind of hard to gauge, but what have you seen from
him?
Well,
he was our top prospect about 4 years ago.
Okay.
But it was a really bad farm system.
Fair.
So you're talking like the 25th ranked farm system, and he was the number one guy. But he was always the youngest kid. Look at when he was at AAA. He was 21 and 22. He's the youngest guy in the league by a year. You know, so he's finally kind of caught up age-wise, and he's put the ball in play a whole lot more. He's always had a little bit of sneaky pop, not much more than like an 8 home run guy, but enough.
Like Eduardo Escobar size,
yeah, pop? Exactly. I think he's a decent. He's showing more of what he is, and he's a really popular guy in the clubhouse. So Rick Renneria really liked him last year, wanted to see more of him. We've seen it. It's weird because Yoan Moncada's coming, and what do they do with him? Because they've got him and Leury Garcia, and I think one of them probably gets moved just because – and I think Leury is probably the easier guy to move because he's played good center field, defensive run save liked him, metrics like him, and he's got the 804 OPS, and he can play shortstop, and he runs like crazy. I think you could pair him with somebody like a Tommy Canley and get something back for them. So I think Yolmer moves around a little bit because he's played third a little. He could play short. He's not great at short, but he can play it. And, you know, if he played outfield, man, that'd be a huge thing for them. But looks like he's mostly infield. So it's going to be interesting to see how his future plays out just because Moncada is coming.
Speaking of shrewd pickups or good prospects, speaking of good prospects, was Alan Hansen a shrewd pickup in your opinion? Because I feel like, you know, he was a big prospect recently. I got my words mixed up there. That was kind of weird. But do you think they have any hope for him to even be just a decent player
for them? Well, I think the tools are still there. I mean, we'll see. He's already comfortable, and that he said that it wasn't always comfortable because of the non-Spanish speaking in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And he said, this has made me feel comfortable. I know some of the guys. I already feel good here. And he's played okay so far. He's actually had a great game in Toronto, hit leadoff a couple days, played center field. He is not a natural center fielder. But they're hoping to get him out there and, you know, see if he can at least provide some, like maybe if they move Leury, that's their next Leury move, you know, play shortstop, play second, play the outfield. So I think it was a good move to try and test it out. I mean, why not? You don't have a ton of infield depth throughout your system, so it's a good guy to take a flyer on.
Avisail Garcia, obviously having a strong season, you've said merits inclusion on the Miami team for the American League All-Star squad. What has gone into this season? You talked to me off the air about him getting into better shape.
Yeah, I think he lost 18 pounds on that.
The discipline's still not a high-profile thing for him, but he's throttling the baseball. How sustainable do you think this is?
Honestly, so the balls in play average is high. It's over 400. That part's going to be tough.
Yep.
But even if it drops, and I think he's going to be more like a 340 guy on that because what he does is he bloops and he can kill you, just blast you. The power hasn't always been there. It's come around a ton this year. He's hit with a ton more of a angle this year. You can look, there's just a much higher amount of that. You know, he used to be much more line drive or on the ground, and he's figured out a way to tap into it a little bit and get under it, which with that power, he's not sacrificing anything. He doesn't have to sell out because all he has to do is put the bat on the ball and it's going to go far. He's just a naturally strong guy, and now he's faster. And, you know, plate discipline, it's a little better, but the thing they loved about him was if you look at his numbers in clutch situations the last couple of years, runners in scoring position, he's always hit like 340, 350. And it was even better with two outs and runners in scoring position. I think it was 415 average last year with runners in scoring position, two outs. So they were like, well, where's this guy come from? Why can't you be this guy for more of it? And they figured out a way to get him to tap in mentally. And he's been more focused and determined. And I don't think he gives up at bats like he maybe did in the past. And, you know, we're seeing the product of what that can be, and it's been really impressive.
Tell me about the two former Twins in the pitching staff, Mike Pelfrey and Anthony Swarzak. What have you seen? Pelfrey's numbers look very familiar to what we saw in the first half of 2015 in that the peripherals are kind of ugly, but the ERA is good.
Yeah.
And Swarzak has come back to the pack just a little bit, but obviously
he got off to a hot start.
The Sasquatch Chasers
down.
Having a decent year.
Yeah, he has. His strikeout to walk is great. He was throwing 95-96 at the start of the year. It's a maybe tiny bit down. I think it's just getting...
He's just a fastball slider guy this year, isn't he?
And it's been impressive, but they've asked a lot. They've thrown a lot of high-leverage innings.
32.1 innings, so he's even ahead of Tyler Duffy, who's been worn pretty thin by the Twins.
I think that he's done a really good job. He's going to end up, if he can maintain this, he's going to get himself a nice contract as a free agent, and that's great for him. I mean, you know, the guy that always was hoping to do high leverage was more of a 2-3 inning guy in the past.
Right.
He's relishing this chance for sure. He said, "I don't want to be the guy that had the great April. I want to be the guy that had the great season." He's been good for them. I mean, they've had so many injuries in the bullpen. He's gone from a guy who was probably the seventh guy making the club out of camp to he's their seventh inning guy right now.
And crazy.
As far as Pelfrey, they're doing a really good job of limiting him. They won't let him go that third time through the lineup.
That's smart.
You know, and they have a whole lot of that going on right now with their staff. Not many seven inning starts lately, but he has been a guy that the first two times his OPS through is 593 and 537. The second time through, it's a 1437 OPS the third time through. So if he can get there and he's still around 60 pitches, which hasn't been happening a whole lot, they'll let him test it out and go.
Usually he won't have the pitch count down that low, though.
But it's been really, like, the other day was, I think he went six and gave up a run in Toronto and against a good Blue Jays lineup. So he's given them exactly what they need. I mean, they picked him up basically, I think, April 8th as AAA depth.
Scrap heap.
And, you know, he was their seventh starter at that time, and he's come up and given them a bunch for that. And I think they're very happy with what they've gotten out of him. I don't know what's going to happen with him when Rodon's back, when Shields is back, when Miguel Gonzalez is back, because they'll have their full complement back. Mm-hmm. But he has given them everything they need for sure.
Well, I think if somebody makes him a reliever, he's going to help them a lot. But
he
could
be a great 2-3 inning reliever.
I keep saying that.
Man,
he's been hesitant to do that, but he would be a good one.
I mean,
he throws hard.
You see it. He goes out there and he has a 9-up, 9-down the first couple times through, and it's really good.
So the last thing I got for you is, what is the outsider's perception of this Minnesota Twins team as you get ready to cover them? You were not here the last time
they
were here,
right?
So I had to make nice with like Colleen and Daryl and all. No, I'm just kidding. Great, you guys have a really fun beat. Actually, in fact, actually Joe Cowley was really nice to me back in the day too. Which I know a lot of people didn't like him, and I don't know if he's even still a thing.
He lives up here, you know that, right?
He told me he lives up here, and he was really nice to me. And it just was funny how it was so different to the perception of how he was kind of abrasive, but. So this will be your first look at them here, I suppose, for the year. I think you probably saw them in Chicago. What's the outside perception of this Twins team as far as what they've done so far this year and, you know, level of being impressed or thinking it's going to crash down?
Well, I mean, the thing I said going into the season, all the preview stories I wrote was really good potential offense, love Buxton in center as a defender. The things he does are – that's elite. I'm going to say it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine.
I'm saying it, man.
I'm saying it. His defense is so superb. It reminds me of Mike Cameron back when he was a kid. It reminds
Devon
me,
White.
Chris Young. Chris Young, the man. When you have a guy that just
right?
Yeah, exactly. You have a guy that shuts down teams. I mean, I've seen more. I love Baseball Savant for the hit percentage on balls.
Oh, yeah.
When Byron Buxton's in
this
the building.
Our love note to Darren Willman, by the way. Thank you for everything you've done.
Because you can say, man, that ball was a 57% chance of being a hit. Buxton took it away. And you could say
and
that
he didn't even
five
get off his feet.
Times.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. You could say that five times a game easily.
And those are always – what people forget is the ball's in the air. Those are doubles if they land.
Exactly.
Like, it's like if you miss a ground ball, it's a single.
Right.
If you miss balls in the air, that's doubles and triples.
Exactly.
Huge.
And so him there – give him time on the bat, man. I know the bat, it's
the Aaron Hicks, Carlos Gomez all over again.
Give him time because it just look at Avi Garcia. I think everybody finally gave up on him last year, and then he comes back this year, and it's been great. It just keep giving that glove time. But I still think they're young. Like, I always thought the pitching had to come along, and, you know, they've got two really good ones right now on the rotation. One's an ace in making.
Jose Barrios is
a really good pitcher. The others are really good pitchers.
Can I get that on the record on Twitter here? We should have a bet, and if I win the bet, you have to tweet Brandon Warren was right. Irvin Santana is not an ace.
CC Crystal.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going with Irvin Santana can be really good.
Yeah,
and he can be a veteran leader. It doesn't make him an ace, but
if he brings you back 200 top 100 prospects in July. You better friggin' do it.
Yeah. I always thought the pitching was going to be the thing that held them kind of back. We'll see. I think that they have a lot going for them, and I think it shows you how much they missed Torrey Hunter last year.
Because
that core really – that 2 years ago team was so much fun.
Yeah,
it was just fun.
Not a 20-loss drop for his production or on-field, whatever. But young teams have so much leeway – When they lose their way, they can really stink, and it was very obvious last year.
Yeah, but it's been fun to watch this year, and You know, to see them sticking around is good. And, you know, they're man, Sano is one of my favorite guys to watch.
Oh, man. That's Tom Schreier on the keys. Dan Hayes, thank you so much for hanging out. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Brandon Warren here telling you to check us out again here later on in the week. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.